We've talked about, so far, we've talked about the preeminence of Jesus. Jesus is preeminent over the prophets. He's preeminent over the angels. He's preeminent over Moses. And we started talking a couple weeks ago about the permanency of Jesus. And Jesus has a permanent priesthood. He has a permanent Sabbath rest. And today we're going to talk about the permanent priesthood. He has a permanent covenant, and he has a permanent sacrifice for us. And then we'll close out looking the last few couple of weeks about the perseverance of Jesus and how Jesus is just all these things to us. And he was all these things to these guys back then. They were they were really boxed in, the Hebrew Christians were. Rome was going through a period when they were just persecuting the Christians in terrible, terrible ways. Nero was ruler at this time, using Christians as candlelights for his dinner parties, putting them in the Colosseum, killing them with the lions. That's when all this was going on, and it was a terrible thing to be a Christian in the eyes of Rome. They were accused of burning down Rome, and you have that on one hand. On the other hand, if you were a Jew, Judaism was a legitimate religion. It was legitimized by the Romans. And so you could be a Jew, you could tell you were a Jew, you could go to the synagogue, nobody cared. It was a legitimate religion in the eyes of Rome, they were left alone. So if on the one hand you're a Christian and they're killing you, and on the other hand you're a Jew, but you're a Christian and were formerly a Jew, which is the safest route to go? Well, obviously, go back to the synagogue. Just lay low in there for a few years till things die down. But the Hebrew writer says, no, you just cannot do that. Said, Jesus is permanent. What you're looking for is a temporary thing that's not going to do you any good. So hang on to the permanency of Jesus. And like, of course, we talked about a couple weeks ago about how that the rest of Jesus, the Sabbath rest of Jesus is permanent, and all these other rests are just temporary. Now, let me tell you what we're going to do today, and that's kind of the introduction. I remember, first of all, I told you there were three sermons. Remember that in the book of Hebrews? The first one we looked at just a couple of weeks ago was Hebrews chapter 6, starting in verse 13. I don't have my big print Bible. Verse 13. And going through the end of chapter 6, and we talked about that to introduce that God makes promises, and he keeps his promises. And that's kind of what the whole thing is based on. God makes promises and he keeps them, so you can just put your hope in that and don't worry about it. The other sermon is chapter 13, the in conclusion sermon. Everybody knows Richard did that this morning in conclusion. Then he preached for 20 more minutes. That's the in conclusion sermon. Just kind of like what Richard did. He was just illustrating that for you. That's the third sermon. The second sermon is found in chapter 5, verse 11, and it goes through chapter 6 and verse 12. About a warning against falling away. We've had a lot of sermons. If you've been around Christianity for more than 3 weeks, we've had lots of sermons on that particular passage of Scripture. So we're not going to really talk about that. We're just going to kind of look at that. You can go back over and look at that in your own leisure. It's just a very practical sermon, but it's the second sermon, really, that he preaches in Hebrews, the book of Hebrews. So go back and look at that on your leisure. I do want to say this about Hebrews chapter 5, verse 11 through chapter 6 and verse 12. And this is my own little personal soapbox, and I'll say this, and then I'm going to go on and not talk about it anymore. I do think that we are like them in what he says, particularly in chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. I think I've noticed in the church a lot through my years in it, and I've been in the kingdom now almost 20 years, that we tend to really go back to basics, in my mind, way, way, way too much. It seems like every time that we do that, a lot. Now, I think if you're a new Christian, you need to just stay in the basics for a while. But I think if you've been a Christian for a long time and things aren't going good, I don't think you need to just go back and think, well, if I just study about baptism and discipleship and that sort of stuff all over again, I'll be okay. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I think a lot of us are afraid to grow up as Christians. We're afraid to go beyond just that. And I just want to encourage you, I'm not saying don't think about those things or talk about them, I just say don't lean on that all the time. He says here, you may not like it, but that's what he says. He says, Brothers, he said, let's leave these things, not laying again the foundation of repentance from acts that lead to death. That's, guys, that's discipleship. He says, don't lay that foundation again. A faith in God. What? No. Instruction about baptism. You don't need to study baptism again and again and again. And for them, he says, the laying on of hands, the resurrection of dead, and even eternal judgment. You don't need to talk about those things again and again and again. So, study some things you've never studied before. Take on some hard topics. Take on some things you've never thought about. Open up the book of Revelation and study that out. Study about grace in Romans. Don't be afraid of those things. And that's basically what he's saying, and I preached too long on that. I think we need to just grow up sometimes in our Bible study and move on. So that's the end of that. Okay. You're, amen that I'm not talking about it anymore? Okay. here he's saying, okay, Christianity is under fire. You can be a Jew, you can go back to that. And what he's telling us now, though, is that Jesus is permanent, so let's stick with him. Okay, now, I want to say one thing about that before we actually look at some more of the text. The temporary always looks better than the permanent. Write that down. What is temporary always looks better than what is permanent. It just always does. I don't know why. Whether it is a temporary relationship or it's a temporary way to obtain power, or is a quick way to make money, it always looks better. And it's the same thing with what Satan comes to us and says, is that if you will do this, the pressure will be off you for just a little while. And it always looks better. Now, what's the shame is that on down the road, it always backfires on us. You know, as we grew up saying in the South, the chickens always come home to roost. They always do. Every single time. But Satan wants you to believe that that won't happen to you. That somehow you will escape that. And that's why they were telling the Hebrew Christians. Go back just temporarily if you need to the synagogue. Lay low. It'll be okay. Temporary always looks better, and it never works. I used to go to, I always had to tell you the whole story. I used to work for the Drug and Alcohol Commission in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. I did volunteer work for them. And so every Tuesday and Thursday night, I'd go to an AA meeting on Tuesday night, and I'd go to an NA meeting on Thursday night. I had to always tell people, they'd say, so what is your drug of choice? I'd say, oh, I don't use. And they'd always go, of course you don't. I'd say, no, really, I'm working for the Drug and Alcohol Commission. Of course you are. So they finally believed me. But one of the sayings in Alcoholics Anonymous is, think the drink through. Think the drink through. And basically what the older guys will tell the younger guys, when you see that drink in front of you, instead of just grabbing it and drinking it and thinking everything will be all right, you can go ahead and drink it if you want to. But first of all, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think about what happens after you drink it, how you're going to feel the next day, and how your sobriety is going to go all the way out. And it's amazing how many people will stop, never take that first drink, because the people who think the drink through don't take the first drink. And that's what basically he's telling them here. He says, think the drink through. Think what it's going to look like down the road. If you turn your back and go back to the world, before you go back, before you get involved in that relationship, before you find that way to make money, before you decide to cheat on this or that, think it through how it will look in the end. Satan does not want you to think the drink through. And he didn't want these guys to do it, but they did. And so we come to Hebrews chapter 4, and starting verse 14, he talks about the permanency, first of all, the permanency of the Sabbath. Sabbath rest of Jesus. Secondly, the permanency of Jesus' priesthood. Therefore, since we have such a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been made, who has been tempted in every way such as we are, just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence, so that we receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Okay, and we'll stop just there just for a second. In chapters 5, 6, and 7, there are three priesthoods that are brought up. Write these down. First of all, there's a priesthood of Levi. We're going to talk about that for a second. Secondly, there is the priesthood of Melchizedek. And thirdly, there is the priesthood of Jesus. And he'll say the priesthood order, or the order of Melchizedek, or the order of Jesus. Order means class, organization, sect, or group. Those of us maybe who grew up in Catholicism, if you grew up in Catholicism, you'd hear about the Jesuit order. Or you'd hear about the Franciscan order. Okay, what that is, that just means a group or a sect, not in a bad way, but just kind of a group of people who believe a certain thing. And here he talks about the order of the priesthood. And he'll talk about the Levitical order, the Melchizedek order, and the order of Jesus. And those are the three priesthoods that are brought up here. And he's basically saying to them, you've got the priesthood of Levi. That's what you want to go back to. But I want to encourage you to hold on to the priesthood of Melchizedek, which eventually transforms into the priesthood of Jesus. What was it about the priesthood of Levi? Let's talk about that first for a second. Chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. These are just some things. Every high priest is selected from among men. The priesthood of Levi was selected from among men. If you were a member of the tribe of Levi, which was one of the 12 tribes of Israel, then you could be a priest. Now, not all Levites were priests, but all priests were Levites. Is everybody with me? Not all Levites, because you had girls. Girl Levites. You had some guys that didn't want to be priests, but if you're going to be a priest, you had to be the priest of Levi. Every Levite is subject from men and is appointed to represent them in matters related to God. Levitical priests were appointed to represent the rest of the 11, the other 11, really 12 tribes, if you count Joseph's kids, to represent them before God, to offer gifts and sacrifices. They were there for the purpose of offering gifts and sacrifices. Only Levitical priests could offer the gifts and the sacrifices. He's able to deal gently with those who are ignorant, who are going astray, since he himself is subject to weaknesses. Levitical priests were not perfect. They were subject to weaknesses. They did what everybody else did. They just kind of got to be the ones who made the sacrifices for the people. In fact, does everybody remember how the Levites got to be the priests? It was kind of really cool. They got to be the priest because when Moses and the children of Israel, they had sinned. I forgot exactly what they'd done. But this plague came through, and Moses was asking, you know, for basically help to deal with the plague. And the members of the tribe of Levi said, we'll help. And so they went through and helped stay the plague. And then did they not kill some people too? Yeah, I think they actually went through and kind of sliced and diced. You know, and so that's, and God said, well, because you are the ones who are willing to put yourselves on the line, that's why your tribe gets to be my priest. And that's how they got that. So that's, you wanted that in information. That's how they did it. Okay. And then in verse 3, it says, that is why he has to offer sacrifices for his own sins as well as for the sins of other people. They were sinners, and they would go in and they offer sacrifices for themselves, but the Levites offer sacrifice for other people. And then in verse, what's that next verse? 4, yeah. Bring the big print Bible next time. No one takes this honor upon himself. He must be called by God just as Aaron was. And Aaron was, of course, of the tribe of Levi. And it says, you have to be called by God to do this. So, you may have wanted to be a priest. You may have thought you could be a priest. But the only ones who could be priests were Levites, okay? And you had to be called by God actually in the Levitical family to be a priest. Not everybody who was a Levite could be a priest. So, we clear? That's the Levitical priesthood. Now, everybody says, well, yeah. And listen, these guys really loved the priesthood. The Jews did. There were certain things they were just nutty about. And I mean, something they really, really liked. They really liked this whole Sabbath thing. Now, we're kind of, that's kind of odd to us. They loved the Sabbath. They loved the priest and the priesthood. They loved the covenant, the old law, and they loved the sacrifice. Brother talked this morning about them cutting the throat and sprinkling. They loved all that. And what the Hebrew writer does is he comes in and takes one of those four cornerstones of Judaism and he says, they will not work permanently for you. And he takes each of them away and says, Jesus is his Sabbath, his priesthood, his sacrifice, his covenant is permanent. These things are all temporary. So now he's dealing with the Levitical priesthood. And he says, all these things, blah, blah, blah. He says, but they're temporary. Well, say, how does he say they're temporary? Turn to chapter 7. See how he just worked through chapter 6? Just went right through it. Let's read verses 1 through 8, then we'll go back and talk about it. Really starting it back in verse 20 of chapter 6. When Jesus, who went before us, has entered on our behalf, he has become a high priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. This Melchizedek was king of Salem and priest of God Most High. He met Abraham returning from the defeat of the kings and blessed him, and Abraham gave him a tenth of everything. First, his name means King of Righteousness. Then also, King of Salem means King of Peace. He was the King of Salem. He was the King of Peace. Without father or mother, without genealogy, without beginning of days or end of life, like the Son of God, he remains a priest forever. We'll talk about what that means in a minute. Just think how great he was. Even the patriarch Abraham gave him a tenth of the plunder. They all called themselves what? Children of Abraham. He says, did you know your father Abraham gave this guy a tenth? Now, the law requires the descendants of Levi who became priests to collect a tenth from the people, that is, their brothers, even though their brothers are descended from Abraham. This man, however, did not trace his descent from Levi, yet he collected a tenth from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. And without doubt, the lesser person is blessed by the greater. Who does he say the lesser person here was? Abraham, the greater person was Melchizedek. In the one case, the tenth is collected by men who died, but in the other, by him who is declared to be living. One might even say that Levi, that's their guy, who collects the tenth, paid the tenth through Abraham, which means Melchizedek is greater than Levi. Because when Melchizedek made Abraham, Levi was still in the body of his ancestor. Who was Melchizedek? Two chapters to read. It's in Genesis chapter 14 and Psalms 110. Did everybody find those? Kind of ask you to do those. Genesis 14, Psalms 110. He's mentioned one time after Genesis 14. That Psalms 110 mentioned one time in the rest of the Bible till we come to Hebrews. There was these five kings who, during the region where Abraham lived, had these four kings under their thumb. The four kings had to pay ransom, had to pay taxes and special tribute to these guys and all this sort of stuff. Had to do it all the time. Been doing it for years. Well, these four kings got together one day and they said, we're kind of sick and tired of that. They're like the IRS to us. We're not going to pay them any more money. And so they said, let's rebel. And all they said, oh, that's a great idea. I bet we can beat them. Well, they didn't. It's SmackDown. They got whipped. And so the five kings come in, beat up the four kings. And what they do is, they come in and they start taking not only the money and the tax stuff, but they take a bunch of people with them back to their homeland. And one of them happens to be Lot, Abraham's nephew. Abraham finds out about it. Goes and gets 180 of his best people, chases after these five kings. Which is pretty cool when you think about it. You know, I thought, what a cool thing. He goes and he does this great military thing in the middle of the night and rescues them. Rescues all the people, rescues the sheep, the goats, the money, beats these five kings in a battle, and goes back home. Now you think about this. Abraham's not some great military strategist. He just beats them. Goes back home. When he comes back home, two kings come out to meet him. The king of Sodom and the king of Salem. They don't mention the king of Sodom's name, but they mention the king of Salem's name. And the king of Salem, who's the great high priest, is named Melchizedek. Okay? And that's how Abraham meets him. And so when Abraham sees him, he takes a tenth of the possessions and gives them to Melchizedek. Now get this. This is just something for you to think about, but it's really interesting. At least it is to me. It should be to you. It is to me. Some original translations did not say Melchizedek was priest of the great high God. They said he was a priest of a great high God. And so there's a lot of discussion as to where Melchizedek was even believed in God. If he wasn't a priest of one of the many gods, the greatest God in that area. Who knows? There's lots of discussion back and forth on that. But all these guys who don't have anything else to talk about, I guess. But, you know, they talk about that. So it's not only if that's true, think about it. Abraham just honors this guy, and all of a sudden he's pulled out, chapter 7, and that theory's floating around with them, he's pulled out as the guy that Abraham pays his tribute to. So that makes it, as they say, is it Alice in Wonderland said, it's getting curiouser and curiouser? Is that correct? It's getting curiouser and curiouser now, you see, about all this. But whatever it was, Abraham gives him a tenth of the spoils. Now it says he's without genealogy, without father or mother. And that means there we just don't have a history of it. He had a father and a mother. Jesus is without genealogy, technically. Never born, never died, in the technical sense. This same way with him, but it just said we don't have a genealogy of it. And so what God does, he pulls this obscure character out of history, and he says Jesus is part of that priesthood. Now, if you're a Jew sitting over here and you've been living with the old Levitical priesthood all your life, and all of a sudden you're told you need to be part of this one, what are you thinking? That's goofy. I don't want to do that. That's nutty. But you know, God sometimes does some goofy stuff, doesn't he? In our eyes. But in the eternal scheme, it makes perfect sense. So he says, Jesus is part of that priesthood. Without beginning or end, eternal. Abraham pays a tenth to him. I thought it was interesting, too. They bring up this about Abraham paying a tenth to Melchizedek. You remember how Jesus always used to say, he'd stir things up. He'd always say, well, you know, before Abraham was, I was. People used to get so mad at him when he'd say that. I think sometimes he did that just to irritate people. You know, just get them to think a little bit. And he always said that, and they bring it up again. Well, guess what? Before Abraham, Jesus wasn't only there, so was Melchizedek. And that's who you ought to stick with, because that goes back even further. If you want to hang on to lineage, if you want to hang on to something that's been around a long time, here's one that precedes Levi. Go with Melchizedek, because he's been around longer. And he brings that back to him. Then he talks about the priesthood of Jesus. Now, I want you to notice this, the priesthood of Jesus. This is very interesting. In chapter 7, we're not going to look at all these because of time, but I want you to write down the following words. The following words talk about the permanency of Jesus' priesthood. And almost all of these are in chapter 7. There are 28 verses in chapter 7. With me? Is that my big print Bible? That's right, isn't it? 28? 8 of those verses talk about the permanency of Jesus. That would tell me that's pretty important. That's like just a little bit over 1 out of every 3. And these are the words he uses. Indestructible. Chapter 7 and verse 16. Richard, I want you to preach a sermon one day on the power of an indestructible life. You tell Richard preach a sermon on anything, you say, you got it. I'll do it. The power of an indestructible life. Chapter 7 and verse 16. That's referring to the life of Jesus. permanent. A permanent priesthood, chapter 7 and verse 24. Forever. Get this. Chapter 7 and verse 3. Verse 17. Verse 21. Verse 24. Verse 28. Isn't that cool? He's indestructible. Verse 16. Permanent. Verse 24. Forever. 3, 17, 21, 24, 28. Always lives. Verse 25. You see what he's doing here? He's saying, look, Judaism is destructible. Judaism is temporary. It will not be around forever. It is not eternal. Those priests will not always live, but Jesus will. Now, let's just have a little practical application here, and we'll do one more thing, then we'll close. You know what? Just think about it. I was thinking about this morning. I thought, I have a spiritual thought every once in a while. It's not often, but I do. I thought, what need of mine has Jesus never met? I thought, I'm going to think about that. Can I think of a single need that I've ever had that Jesus has not met? I know what my answer was. Think about that for yourself. Just think about that this afternoon or tomorrow morning or something. Write down your most basic needs and just say, has God never met one of those needs for me? Has my relationship with Jesus not made sure that need was met? I could not think of a single one. Now maybe I'll get thinking about it more and something will pop up. I don't believe it will. But you know, Jesus meets all our needs, and that's what he's saying here. So don't trade in a temporary priesthood for one that is permanent. Don't get under the radar. Stay out there in the fight. Keep going. Because what Jesus will do for you as your priest before God, no one else, nothing else can provide that need. Let's close with this. There's one other thing about Jesus' priesthood that he brings up in here that I just absolutely love. And I want to just talk about this for 3 minutes, then we'll be through. And this is the personal nature of Jesus' priesthood. The personal nature of Jesus' priesthood. Chapter 4 and verse 15. We'll look at these real fast. Chapter 4 and verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses. Jesus is, he's able to sympathize with our weaknesses. Even the Greek word here for sympathize, it is pronounced supathesi. And it's the English word for sympathize. Supathesi is the English word for sympathize. And it means to suffer with or to be touched with. Jesus is able to sympathize with our weaknesses. Anything that you feel is a weakness, Jesus has felt that. He understands it. Chapter 7 and verse 25. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him because he always lives to intercede for them. As a personal high priest, he's able to save completely. You don't have to go back every once in a while to wonder if you're saved. Some of us really, really need to learn that lesson. You don't have to question your salvation day in and day out. Satan wants you to, but you don't have to question it. He's able to save completely. He doesn't have to come down and sacrifice himself every year or go to the holy place, most holy place, once a year. He's did it once, deal sealed. As long as you don't do anything stupid and leave, you're good to go. Just remember that. As long as I don't do anything stupid and leave, I'm good to go. I get to go to heaven. Chapter 7 and verse 26. Such a high priest meets our needs. He's able to meet our needs. I said that one a while ago. And then chapter 4 and verse 16. Chapter 4 and verse 16. Last verse of the chapter. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our need, in our time of need. Jesus being the great high priest enables us to approach the throne of grace with confidence. You know what? I think it's so cool in the morning when you get up and you're praying. And you know, we don't feel this all the time for whatever reason. But isn't it cool the mornings when you know you're praying that you really believe God's sitting there listening to you? You really believe it? You think, man, I have really connected today. This is so stinking cool. And that is really what Jesus' sacrifice did for you. It enables you to approach the throne of God with confidence. You know He's there. You know He's listening to you. And you know He's going to answer your prayers. And He always does. Every single time. Sometimes it's yes, sometimes it's no, sometimes it's wait. But you know, every single time I have approached God, He's there, I'm there, we're there together. Jesus being a priest makes that possible because He always lives to intercede for you. When you approach the throne of God and you ever wonder about whether you're really there or not, Jesus is there telling God, yep, that's one of mine. You can listen to Him. You can listen to her. Yep, that's my daughter. Yeah, listen to her. That's what a high priest does. They live to intercede before God for us. So, is it next week? We get to do this again next week, right? I can hear me. Okay, next week, we're going to talk chapter 8. We're going to talk about the permanency of Jesus' covenant. Okay? All right. Thanks.